Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:35 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is May 24th. Well, I thought I'd kick off with the Dow Jones Industrial Average because it was down 255 points, pulling back down through the 200-day moving average. Now, it hasn't really been performing all that well this year, and still chugging along, but there's a downward bias to trading over the last 6 months. And we've seen several occasions where it has bounced from the region of the 1,000-day moving average over the course of the last 15 years. We had the big inconsistency in 2020, where it dropped straight through it, then rebounded very quickly. Then we had another example. So the region of the 200-day moving average has been an area of support, but it's being tested more violently over the course of the last 3 years. And now the index is rolling over once more. So we'll have to see a very clear upward dynamic. At one point today, the NASDAQ 100 was down about 1%, and it paired the decline in here today. Now, this has also bounced from the region of the 200 of the, excuse me, the 1,000-day moving average on several occasions, and it has been up for the last 4 consecutive weeks. So this is just the first negative week, and it's pausing in the region of the 14,000 level, which is exactly where it paused all the way back in August of last year. Now, what I find especially interesting is that stocks are generally steady, and we're really only starting to see the first example of weakness, despite the fact that the regional banks haven't been able to rally to break their downtrend in any meaningful way and are starting to roll over again. And then you're also now starting to see larger banks exhibiting stressful signals. So US Bancorp is the fifth largest bank in the USA. We're not talking about a small bank here, and it hasn't rallied. And most particularly, it's starting to roll over again. So this is still a really quite a clear downtrend, and I think it's also worth looking at as much back history as we have available because it's not quite at the lows from back in 2008. But this is a meaningful level where it came back to test the low from 2020, and there's no real evidence of support starting to come through. So we still have stress in the banking sector. And then if we look at just 1 month yield, well, then what we're now starting to see is the clear upward pressure. So anything that is maturing in less than a month has a yield in excess of 6%. Some are have that will mature before the end of this month have a maturity almost up to 7%. And obviously, this is starting to price in the potential that the USA might default on its debt. Of course, this isn't just any country doing or talking about this, but it's also a rather interesting environment that it's not the market is telling the USA that they can't borrow more money. Although the rise in yields is certainly a nod in that direction. But instead, it's a political imperative, and we don't see that in many other countries. And in fact, I don't think we see it in any other country. And eventually, it will result in a grown-up conversation about the fiscal situation. But I don't think that's something that's going to happen over a weekend. And I think that what they're basically going to do is put a band-aid over the issue over the course of the next week. And I think that's the reason why we're getting a little bit of weakness in the US stock markets. Investors just don't know. And we're still in an environment where liquidity conditions are tight. So Bitcoin prices were down $1,000 at one point and paired that decline to about 850 by the close, and coming back now to test the 25,000 level. Now, if this is a first step above the base, we should anticipate that support will be found around the 25,000 level. But in order for there to be a big bull market, and similar to the big rebounds we've seen in the past, well, then we're going to have to see more liquidity. And given the Fed meeting or excuse me, the Fed minutes were pretty evenly spread between those who wanted to hike again and those who wanted to pause. I think that it's reasonable to anticipate that Jay Powell is not lying and basically saying that they're probably going to pause. They want to see what's going to happen next, but they're not ready yet to cut rates. And central banks, they don't generally want to cut rates until they have to, and they want to get inflation under control. But we're just not there yet. Now, what is interesting as well is that gold prices were down in here today, and that is in response to the dollar being quite firm. So the dollar index now is pushing up again and pushing to a new recovery high in here today and testing the region of the exponential moving average. This is a meaningful rebound. Even though we've had weakness in gold and most particularly weakness in copper, where the price has broken downwards again in here today, and this continues to look like a medium-term type 2 top formation with a period of right-hand extension. So the bearish potential is that copper prices could fall quite significantly from where they are right now. But we do have companies like ExxonMobil and Pioneer Natural Resources and Shell investing in renewable energy resources. And potentially then, I mean, you have Exxon, for example, spending $100 million on a lithium resource. Now, for a company of this size and turnover, $100 million is not a lot of money. But it does help to placate some of the environmental lobby and also gives them a toehold in what has the potential to be the future of the transportation sector. But I think that the timeline on that is likely to be a lot longer than most people anticipate. There's absolutely no way that the 2020, excuse me, the 2050 zero carbon ambitions can be realized. That basically means that we're going to be using oil and natural resources for quite a long time. And then we can think about, you know, the potential where the tech where I think is very interesting. We have full-throated faith that AI is going to change the world, and that is certainly helping to support some of the impressive rebounds we've seen in the large cap companies. So Microsoft was is still marching higher, but it is overbought in the short term. Nvidia has been granted this extraordinarily high valuation, and it is still quite steady. Now, we can also see here that in the after hours, it's up over $45, which takes it up to 350. So when we look then at their forecast, well, they really do see that it is the go-to share for artificial intelligence. And they're selling a copycat of their own chip to China in serious volume in order to get around sanctions. And I think that is certainly helping to support the price. So it's likely then that we will have a rebound again tomorrow in terms of the demand for the technology sector. But this also is a reflection of the still abundant liquidity that's out there. So we have tightening of the conditions for new liquidity, but there's still a lot of cash that's sitting around and ready to be invested and sloshing around the system. So we still have this enthusiasm. And then we did have some enthusiasm for the quantum computing sector yesterday. And then we can look at, for example, D-Wave, where it has popped up to about 110. And I think these are really exceptionally volatile shares. So let's simply look at this on a logarithmic scale chart. And I think that helps to highlight just how much of a move we've had in just the last 3 days. Some of these shares have doubled and done better than that. So There's certainly some interest flowing into the quantum computing sector as well. And it does really help to look at those log scale charts to highlight just how much of a rally is underway. And then let's think about fusion. Well, we've seen power supply agreements signed by Microsoft. They're willing to buy fusion energy, even though it doesn't really exist. And then, if we're going to have a carbon future, the only way that's going to happen is with a step change in the technological environment. And there are possibilities that these kinds of innovations can occur and will occur, and then change the entire energy outlook. But they don't exist today. And even then, when we have a clear vision of when they will reach commercial utility, well, then the lead time for building these kinds of reactors and putting them into commercial use is still stretching into the decade and decades. And then, of course, you have these small modular reactors, which are much more near-term commercial utility, but then also about 5 years to build the first one. And then the aim is to replace coal-fired power stations and just hook these small modular reactors up to the power lines. So then you don't have to build the infrastructure. But again, this is going to take time. And even though we've had some weakness in the broad commodity complex, oil prices continue to strengthen. And the Brent crude price now is coming back up to test the $80 level. Now, there's been a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs in the oil price for at least the last 8 months. And now the big question is whether this rebound in oil can go far enough to break that trend in an environment where we do have tight liquidity conditions, where we do have downward pressure on lots of other commodities in the near term. Now, there was a lot of, I think, worry about Brazil, excuse me, about Mexico yesterday. And the iShares Mexico ETF was in negative territory again in here today. But Grupo Mexico has come to an arrangement with the government, and they will get paid for the railroad that's been expropriated. So the share is bouncing now from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, what that also helps to suggest is that the rule of law and due process is still available in Mexico, and that should help to support the investment case for the country. And the Mexican peso has also begun to steady following a few days on the downside, so it's shown inversely here. And the dollar's downtrend remains quite intact, particularly on a day where the dollar was appreciating. The Mexican peso appreciated faster. Now, inflation in the UK is problematic. And one of the biggest challenges right now is that the traditional measure, which strips out food and energy, usually tends to be less volatile. And at present, it's making new highs, even though CPI, the raw CPI, is in fact going down. And this is a clear signal that inflation is rather sticky in the UK. And of course, if you're not going to look at the food and energy, well, then you kind of have to look at services and shelter. And shelter prices in the UK continue to march higher, particularly at the luxury end, where demand from foreign investors continues to rise. Of course, with gilt yields now back in the region of where they were in October, then the number of people rolling their mortgages that are going to come under stress, I think, is going to be quite high. And that is likely to put downward pressure on the economy. So in the near term, the risk is to the downside in the FTSE 250. It dropped down from this short-term range in here today. pulling back from the excuse me, from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this hasn't been an especially consistent trend over the last 5 years. So certainly we have some pressure coming to bear. Now the upward pressure on yields more generally are weighing on the dividend aristocrats. So the dividend aristocrat ETF is weakening and looks like it's rolling over here. Now I think it's worth looking at some of the more common dividend aristocrat type companies. So Microsoft is now unwinding, excuse me, McDonald's is now unwinding a short-term overbought condition. Now, I think it's interesting here that the yield is about 2%, which is not something that will move the needle for a lot of people. But when we think then about, well, what is the kind of yield that people like? Well, historically, at least, 3.5% has represented a really important low for McDonald's, but the share has continued to march higher. And then we have Johnson and Johnson, and we can see that it's also around the 3.5% level that demand starts to come back in. And Cisco Corp, it's not it's generally all the way back in 2009, it got up to a yield of 4%, but 3.5% in 2020 was enough to start to bring people back in. So then let's just look at that yield on the Dividend Aristocrat ETF, and it's still around 1.6% on an indicated basis. So in the teeth of a crisis, it would be normal to see Dividend Aristocrats yielding 3.5%, and that would be the point at which investors who do prize not just a yield but also the reliability of dividend growth, that's when they step in and buy in size. So we're not quite there yet, and we're still in an environment where the pressure on investors hasn't really been exaggerated. And I do think that with the banks that are under severe duress and the continued upward pressure on yields, that it is inevitable that we will have more surprises on the downside in the economy, and that the stock market will have really a large number of buying opportunities at some point over the next year. And the yield curve spread has rolled over again, so continuing to compress. That suggests that the period of maximum weakness in the markets is still ahead of us. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.